So I've never had this happen before, and welcome to the Shilling Show, by the way. 977-1070 is the phone number. Where I was sitting at home yesterday morning and received a telephone call on my home line. It was in the 9 o'clock hour. And there was a lady on the phone whom I had not met before, but obviously listens to the Shilling Show and appreciates what we do here. Also appreciates David Morata. And she was so excited about David Morata's most recent publication in the Daily Progress Business Monday section that she was enlisting me to see if I could get this some national coverage. Maybe I could pull some strings with my friends up at the Wall Street Journal or call some of the national talk show hosts and get this out there. And I thought it was really a testament to the work that David Morata is doing in this community, aside from his position as president of Morata Wealth Management. That's his work. But he's also serving the community and putting forth these ideas that are stated so clearly and so concisely on various topics. Today, we're talking with David on a better plan for healthcare, which is encompassing a broad range of ideas. And David Morata, thank you for joining us on The Shilling Show.
Thank you.
All right. So we're making those calls to The Wall Street Journal. In the meantime, we're going to be talking about this today. And there is so much to get to as we've seen these meetings across these town halls, these tea parties across America. And the title of one of your papers on this, your white papers analyzing this, is Avoiding a Civil War Over Health Care. And it was an interesting topic because certainly people are getting heated at these meetings. I don't think there's anything wrong with people being passionate about what they believe in, but we certainly don't want it to go beyond the discussion level. We don't want people coming to fisticuffs or anything at meetings. Maybe we could start out by characterizing what the argument is.
Yeah, the argument seems to be on the I'll call them liberal and conservative, although I never think those are quite the best labels. But on the liberal side, or as I like to call it, the utopian side, the status quo is simply unacceptable. We have to do something about it. Every single person should have air to breathe, water to drink, food to eat, and health care. So it's just considered a right that is due every citizen, maybe even everyone who's on our soil, that we would take care of even non-citizens. And on the other side, it's a question of how is the government going to intervene in our lives? How much control is it going to take of our individual choices and freedoms? How much is it going to mess up the way in which economics works? How much is it going to ruin the economy? And so those two are almost incompatible positions. And at some point, the culture wars in America turn into something more angry than that. And I think given the discontent on the right is because they are completely out of power, they're completely without a say, and the left appears to be bent on getting as much changed as quickly as possible before the pendulum swings back again. And so that obviously elicits huge emotions on both sides.
You know, this is interesting because I understand the basis of those on the right, the conservatives, or the tragic argument as you portrayed it, the tragic versus the utopian vision. I believe that people there are coming from a constitutional perspective. What is the basis of the utopian claim that there's a right to health care? I mean, where does that come from other than I want it?
Yeah, it's interesting. My daughter was in her government class in a senior in high school last year, and they came about to why you would enumerate rights or you would not enumerate rights. And a lot of her class members couldn't understand why you would enumerate rights or not enumerate rights in the Constitution. And the question arises, what is a right and what is not a right? Obviously, we have certain rights in the Constitution. We don't have a right, for example, to correspondence, which is confidential. So all of our correspondences are not confidential. They can be intercepted. And that's a right that some other countries have or don't have. We don't have a right to freedom of education. The Netherlands has a right to freedom of education. And anyone can start a school and get the government funding and support, and therefore it would solve the problem of private schools. Every school could be private or public. It wouldn't matter. It would still get the same funding, and you'd have basically a voucher system, and that's built into the Netherlands Constitution. So is healthcare a right or not? Is some basic form of welfare a right or not? And that is, most societies, I think, wrestle with that. And the question is, where do you draw the line? And how much incentive do you give to the free markets to work in an efficient manner?
You know, we had, it's very interesting, and Gary, hold the line, we'll get to you in just a moment, and the lines are open at 977-1070. I do have an answer for that, because I was at a rally outside of Congressman Perriello's office a couple weeks ago and organizing for an American rally, which is an offshoot of the Democratic National Committee. And the Organizing for America folks were holding up their signs, healthcare now, healthcare is a right. And someone said, you know, where do you get that from? And the guy shouted out, it's in the Ten Commandments, you know, love your neighbor. So anyway, I have that video clip on shillingshow.com. He must be reading the Bible from the Unity Church. Gary is on line number two. Gary, welcome to the Shilling Show.
How you doing, Rob?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for calling. You're on with David Murata.
How you doing, David? I was just listening to your show, and you know, I'm not, I consider myself not a Democrat, not a Republican, not a Libertarian. I vote for the guy that I have a gut feeling for. But your comments about what denotes a right, why people feel they have rights to certain things and why they do not, I do have an opinion on that. My grandfather fought in World War I. My father fought in World War II. All the brave young men and women that have been fighting the wars that we've been in over the past 20, 30 years are, to me, there aren't a whole lot of people that aren't untouched. They either have aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, great-grandfathers or whatever that have fought in these wars that have protected the world, I mean the world, actually. So, and when it comes to something as simple as health care, I have health care. I'm fortunate enough to have health care through my wife's work, and we have been able to take advantage of it over the years, and it's helped us out immensely. But there are people that have fought in wars. There are people that are relatives of people that have fought in wars, and I just think our veterans have fought for the right for people down the line to have a simple health care program that could take care of everybody. There's no reason in this world why somebody should walk into a hospital in this country, anywhere in the world, and have to be looked at cross-eyed or say, well, they don't have health insurance, we'll ship them to another hospital or something like that. I was just wondering what you guys think of that as far as that perspective on that.
Okay, Gary, thank you very much, and let's let David respond to it.
Okay. Yeah, there's a couple of things, Gary. The first is, you make a strong case that veterans are deserving of our support to provide health care for them. But it's not a question of deserving. Find me a group that's not deserving. You know, I can continually throw out more and more groups. They're all deserving. I will completely grant you that providing veterans benefits is a great idea, and providing health care for benefits benefits for veterans is a great idea. But the argument of deserving fails because it's universal. Every single person in America, every single person in the world is deserving of treatment with respect. And part of that respect would be they shouldn't have to walk into a hospital. But you're in the utopian view because you say when you say as simple as healthcare is, the truth of the matter is that healthcare is an asymptotic need because it is infinite. And that's the problem. So when you say they're deserving of health care, now you suddenly have to define what health care are they deserving of. Are they deserving that someone pays for the first dollar when they buy aspirin? Or is someone deserving of, if they have a catastrophic loss and it costs over $10,000, someone will come in and provide that benefit? You see, or is it if they can extend life with $1 million by one more day, are they deserving of that? In other words, it's asymptotic what the needs are, and at some place you have to draw certain lines. And the question I have is, who should be the one who makes that decision?
Well, I hear what you're saying also, but I'm a compassionate person. I'm a construction worker. Anybody that would need help, I'd be the first one to help them. If I was a physician, and I knew a family was struggling, I'd be the first one to go the extra mile with him. If I was an ER doctor and a family needed some extra, I'd be the first one to go. A lot of that is lost in our country today. A lot of good American feelings are lost in this country today because of just so much arguing going on. When Tom Perriello was out in Greene County, there was a lot of yelling. You were talking about things shouldn't come to fisticuffs. Well, you put a person like Tom Perriello out in Greene County, and I think Tom Perriello is a good guy. I liked Virgil Good too for a while, but you throw him in a climate like that, you're gonna, especially. Listen, I live in Northern Albemarle. You go out in Green, you start ruffling feathers, you get stones thrown back at you.
Yeah, it's the same thing.
Yeah, you're in these little towns, and that's what you're finding. You're finding people that are disgruntled to start with.
Let me just ask you a quick question because we're coming up on the news here, and you mentioned your own personal compassion. If you saw somebody that had squandered away all of their money instead of taking care of themselves, sitting next to somebody who really was a victim through no fault of their own and just didn't have any money, which one would you help first, or are they both equally deserving of your assistance, your personal assistance?
I'd help the second one more, probably.
The one who is just in it because they didn't squander, but because they just fell into it. And I think that's the decision. And Gary, thank you for the call. We're heading into a break here. That's the decision that we have to make, because there's not unlimited resources. And there are many, many people in this country who have chosen not to take care of themselves for other reasons. And secondarily, you talk about the government. And you talk about how America used to take care of people. The reason that Americans don't take care of people anymore is because they are now relying on the government to do their job for them. And they stop giving to charitable organizations. And they stop realizing that it's their own responsibility, like everybody used to know years ago. Gary, it's an excellent call. It's always good to hear from you. We'll be back with David Morata and The Shilling Show right after this. 12:34 here on The Shilling Show, 977-1070 is the phone number. We do welcome all points of view, and I really want to stress to people that I want you to think about the things that we're talking about. I don't want you to just react off emotion. I mean, it's okay if that's your first reaction, but I'd also like you to think about it logically and to be open to understanding the consequences of what your feelings are, because when we follow our feelings, sometimes we can really get into a lot of trouble. 977-1070 is the number, and Greg has been waiting through the break. Greg, thanks so much for calling The Shilling Show. You're on with David Morata.
Hey, David, how are you?
Good.
I'd like to comment on the last caller. You know, I can understand people's sympathy toward other people not being able to get care, and there are people who try and can't get it. But, you know, there are also the things like people who decide to buy widescreen TVs and hubcabs, who would do that in lieu of buying health insurance, or, you know, people who decide to choose a life of alcoholism and drugs, and so therefore they don't stay gainfully employed. So why is it the responsibility of the rest of the people who are working hard to pay extra taxes to take care of people who don't take care of themselves because of irresponsibility? You know, I think that the health care thing, if they open the free market, open state borders, and work on tort reform, and people who are responsible, who aren't getting it now, will get it based on a more efficient economy, you know, business-type model. And the reason the Obama administration is pushing this thing is they just want socialism, and the best way to get it is through health care.
Yeah, Gary, you make some great points, especially
this
about...
Is Greg.
Greg, yeah. Sorry. You make some great points, especially about tort reform and opening the borders, places where government intervention has caused inefficiencies in the market and a higher cost of health care. As an example of this, imagine someone has the choice of getting an MRI and pretend the MRI costs $4,000. The real question that you're getting at is, who should make the decision if they get that MRI? And does it matter what kind of a person they are? So imagine they're a millionaire, and maybe you think they don't really need the MRI, they're just doing it because they're rich. Should you be able to say, no, I know you have the money, and you could afford to get a $4,000 MRI, but MRIs are too valuable, and so we're only going to give them to those who need them, and therefore you can't make that decision? or turn it around and pretend like the person's a poor person, and you think they do need the MRI, are you going to give them a free MRI, or are you going to give them $4,000 and tell them it's their decision? Because those are two very, very different choices. If you give them a free MRI, they will use it whether they need it or not. If you give them $4,000, they may decide that, you know what, the MRI that costs $4,000 isn't worth it. It's better for me to spend that money on something else. And maybe it would be a flat screen TV. Maybe it would be their kids' education. Maybe it would be more food for their family. They'd buy more meat. Who knows what it would be, but is it their choice is the real question. Or is it not their choice, and we're not going to give people choice on how they spend their money?
Well, that wasn't my point. My point was that they aren't going out and buying insurance because they're making poor choices. They don't go out, they buy TVs instead of health care plans.
Right. Or you could say they're making good choices and they're going out and they're saving for their kids' education rather than buying health care because they're relatively healthy. And the question is, if you leave the choice to them, they might make a bad choice and buy a flat screen TV. They might make a good choice. If they're a young family, it is not the best choice to get health care. Because we have regulations where you can't charge young people, you can't charge old people more than twice young people, and so they charge young people too much. The ratio should be about 5-1. You should be able to get, if you're young and healthy, you should be able to get health care for about 20% of the cost of an older person.
Well, the free market would allow that.
Yes.
They would open up borders and stuff like that.
That's exactly right. So there's a sense in which less regulation provides more efficiencies in the free market. You're exactly right. And that's the criticism that's made of conservatives. The criticism is made that conservatives want to do nothing. But anyone who's been in economics knows that doing nothing is allowing the free market to work, and the free market supply and demand allows every single person to make the choice of if they think that's worth it or not. And that provides the most efficient use of a limited scarce resource. And so there's a sense in which doing nothing interferes with the free market the least and provides the most efficient markets. I would say it would be good if we could separate income redistribution from the other healthcare control. So if you're trying to control healthcare because you want to do income redistribution, just do the income redistribution. Just give poor people the $4,000 and let them decide whether or not they want to get an MRI or they want to save for their kids' college education. Why mess it up for the 80% of us who aren't poor just to do the income redistribution for the 20% who are poor?
Well, I don't believe in income redistribution either.
Yeah, that's why it's two separate debates. Mm-hmm. One is whether you should have lots of controls on what you can and can't do in healthcare, and the second one is whether or not you want to have income redistribution. And both of those together frustrate conservatives or classic liberals or libertarians, because both of those are providing disincentives for what's most efficient.
And Greg, thanks so much for the call. That leaves the line open at 977-1070. So I guess the million-dollar question is, or the $4,000 question, or whatever it is, if that was the way that we did it and we allow people to be free to make choices, as I think we should, what is the consequence for choosing to squander your money? I think of the ant and the grasshopper. And then all of a sudden you have $1 million medical bill and you didn't spend your $4,000 properly. Then what happens?
Yeah. And this, one of my columns talked about a compromise to achieve universal coverage, because we Americans are a generous and tenderhearted society. It's interesting to me that conservatives make 6% less than liberals and give 30% more.
Mm.
So there's a sense in which you're right. The lack of, or that liberals make up for not giving by simply their political decision to give other people's money, and that's not charity. And that was one of my articles. But I think we are a tender-hearted lot, and so we are going to want to sweep in and rescue people who don't have some kind of catastrophic coverage. And that was one of my compromises to try to find a place that where the left and the right can meet, is to have some high deductible health insurance, which is required across all of society. And maybe for some people that might be $1 million deductible, because they can prove that $1 million deductible is all they need.
Mm-hmm.
And for other people, maybe it's a $5,000 deductible, because even if a poor person has five $1,000 they need to pay out of pocket, there are charities who can come in and help with that. But there aren't charities who can come in and help with a catastrophic loss. So some high deductible health care insurance would maintain as much as possible the supply and demand curve and the disincentive of the first dollar spent, but still satisfy, I think, the tenderheartedness that when someone does have a catastrophic loss, we feel like they ought to have insured themselves against that. Now, to do that, you have to take away some of the regulation that's in place, because young people ought to spend a lot less money on catastrophic coverage than old people, because the likelihood of a young person needing it is very, very small. And when we let the AARP lobby gouge young poor people for the sake of old rich people, we're doing a disservice to the country as a whole. So it's got to be actuarially writing based upon what their real risks are. And if we do that, then I think the burden would be light enough on socialism. Now, I wrote that column and got blasted from both sides. Liberals who said, no, that's not enough. We want every dollar spent in healthcare coverage. And conservatives who said, where do you find the right to do that in the Constitution? And they're both right. But we have so far bent the Constitution so far that this is a very small bending of the Constitution. And on the other hand, I think the liberals just have to give up every single dollar being spent the way that they think it ought to be spent. That kind of control is an evil unto itself.
News Radio 1070 WINA. We're speaking with David Morata. We're talking about a better plan for health care. And when we get back, we're going to talk about the case against centralized health care and some of the other issues that could be involved if we go to that system here, which so many people are clamoring for. We'll be back with more of The Shilling Show and you at 977-1070 right after this. 977-1070 is the phone number as we head into the final segment with David Morata today, president of Morata Wealth Management. We're talking about a better plan for health care, and you could visit him online at emorata.com, and I suggest that you do. And so let's look at some of the problems that you laid out in the case against centralized health care, because, again, I think people are feeling this thing, but they're not thinking about what's going to happen.
Yeah, the problem with centralized health care is that every decision you make is a decision you're making for someone else that they would not make for themselves. So you're overriding their decisions and you're deciding that you're going to do something else. So the question is, how big do you want to make that burden? And the more you're trying to solve problems, really the more evil you become in trying to direct people's lives and make them serfs or robots or automatons. So, I mean, the first question is, can we make health insurance mandatory? And if you make health insurance mandatory, you're telling everyone they have to go buy health insurance, that that's more important than anything else that they could do. And so, you know, if you think that's a good idea, then turn your budget over to me and I'll tell you how to spend various pieces of your budget. And you don't want to do that because you think you're competent to make your own decisions and decide whether or not you should have catastrophic health care or not, or you should have first dollar health care, or you should not have any health care at all, or you should spend your money on meat or vegetables or whatever your choices are. So to step in and to say that, it should be a very, very, very small piece of your budget. And catastrophic health care, if you did it that way, might work. If you do it for all of health care, it's, you know, 17% of our gross domestic product, and that's a huge chunk that you're taking out of people's free choice. But then the second thing is that you're not going to get compliance. We have compliance with the IRS of about 85%.
Mm-hmm. And they've got a long arm and a strong arm, don't
yes.
they?
Yes. And so, I mean, just look at Geithner. We have top government officials who can't even comply with the IRS rules. So you're going to have people who don't comply with your health insurance rules. You're going to have people. And so what are you going to do with that? With some people, you're going to have to set an example. So you're going to have some kind of health insurance evasion, and you're going to jail some people for it and fine some other people for it simply because they don't want to get the health insurance coverage that you're mandating. But then you're going to have some people who don't get it. Maybe even they could have gotten it free, but they're too poor. They don't know how to fill out the forms. Maybe they have other social problems that keep them from holding a job or functioning in society. And now all of a sudden they won't have health insurance even though you would have paid for it. And now they walk into an emergency room and they need coverage. Are you going to cover them anyway? Well, we're a a tender-hearted society. So yes, you are. So on the one hand, people who avoid health insurance and never needed it, you're going to throw in jail. And people who avoided health insurance and needed it, you're going to pay for them anyway. And so all of a sudden, people are going to start viewing you as the totalitarian from hell who's causing all of this havoc within society. And then for 98% of the people who get this coverage, they will not need it. And they will think that your mandate is simply costing them more out of pocket than they could have had otherwise. The 2% who need it will be insignificant. That's the way insurance works. Mm-hmm. So again, you're going to start eating away at your goodwill, and it's going to become very difficult. But then you're also going to have the problem of what qualifies as coverage. And every single advocate of this or that disease or infirmity or treatment should be covered will come to you and say, make this one required, make this one required. I talked to one of our state legislators, and Virginia has to define what Virginia coverage is. And it's very easy to parade a whole host of people who suffer from some disease, and they will come and they will say, you know, for pennies a day on everyone else's in coverage, then this can be included as required. And so you'll have advocates of abortion or nutritional counseling or dentistry or orthodontics or chiropractic services or psychotherapy or Viagra. And they'll be coming to you saying, require that ours is coverage, require that ours is covered. And then you're going to have to decide what's covered and what's not. And so it snowballs into this madhouse of government power and control. And the more power and control you give to government, two things happen. One, the more corrupt government becomes, because if it has power and it can sway billions of dollars in the healthcare industry, people are going to try to manipulate it to swing it their way. And then second, it's going to control more and more people's lives, and that in and of itself has its own evil consequences.
Yes, and we need look no further than Charlottesville City Hall for evidence of that theory. Let's go to line number one. Chris is on the line, and Chris, thanks for calling The Shilling Show. You're on with David Murata.
Thanks for taking my call, and I've read some of David's pieces in the newspaper or in the Business Journal section. And certainly there are lots of problems with the healthcare system, and there are lots of problems with some of the various fixes that are being discussed. But what I haven't heard, particularly from the I guess you call it the conservative side, is some real concrete plans of how to fix it. There's a lot of ways to criticize what is being some of the plans that are out there, and a lot of those criticisms are, you know, very valid. But at some point, we have to have some, you know, the other side needs to come up with some solutions as well. And simply saying, well, we really need to let the free market aspects fix things, I don't see that as viable, because it has pretty much been a free market up to this point, and it is not fixed.
Yeah, Chris, let me press you on that a little bit, because it hasn't really been a free market. And from an economic viewpoint, a free market spends money exactly where it should go. So there's a sense in which the default of doing nothing or doing less regulation wins the day for an economist, unless you can tell me what you're trying to fix. So what problem with healthcare are you trying to fix?
Well, I'm trying to fix the problem that, for example, in my company, for the last 5-10 years. The premiums are going up more than any sort of increases in salaries or raises. It's getting to the point where people are now making less money in terms of money they take home than a decade ago.
We're running out of time, and so I'd like this back and forth to be as brief as possible.
Yeah, okay. I'll give one more example, then I'll hang up. The other example is people who are out there working. They're not getting welfare or anything, and they just cannot afford any type of health insurance. And that, I think, needs to be addressed. Whether you want to call it a right, they need some way to where they can at least have the option of paying for some health insurance at some reasonable cost.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, Chris, thank you so much. Great point.
Yeah. So Chris, you're right in there in the mix. The first thing is one of the reasons why healthcare costs are going up is because the person who pays, benefits, and decides is not all the same person. So somebody who's covered under an insurance plan is the one who benefits. A doctor decides mostly based on practicing defensive medicine, and a health insurance company pays. And when you have those out of sync, you're going to have problems. I'm a strong advocate for health savings account where the first dollar you pay is yours. You get to decide and you contain your own costs for the first, say, $5,000 to $10,000. I can tell you that if you go to a health savings account, it will contain costs itself, because I'm on a health savings account and didn't have an MRI that was suggested for a foot injury because the treatment wasn't going to be any different. So I saved a good $2,000 there because the treatments were going to be the same. And then the same thing, if you have a need and you say people can't afford healthcare insurance, I would say that solve the problem of the redistribution of wealth apart from healthcare. And if you think there are people who can't afford healthcare, I would say they probably can afford the catastrophic coverage. It's just 98% of the time they don't need it. And so that would be an option there, is to have some sort of wealth transfer to the poor. But with the extreme poor, we actually have coverage. Medicaid and the centralized for children both cover it.
All right. We're going to have to leave it there. It's great, Tom. I'm sorry we didn't have time to take your call. David, you always stir up the pot, and it's good to have you here. Thanks so much. A lot of wisdom in this. And visit David online at emirata.com. You can read more of these. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
All right.